At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
Of course.
Guys, my man is here. Ben Camone is here. But before we get to it, oh, by the way, this is a Full Blast podcast, lest you forget. And before we get to it with my man Ben, we got to take care of a little business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a sick grinder. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KnifeTalk10, you're going to get 10% off everything, all their attachments, their grinders. I love what Ryan's doing, and Ryan and Ben are great, and they just moved. Go follow Broadbeck Ironworks on Instagram. I'm sure they're doing a lot more content in regards to the move to a bigger shop. Congratulations. And we're with them. We're also with Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. Solid state drive, tap control, you know how it is. I mean, it ain't going to work unless you got it right. And if you want to get it right, use an Even Heat, you know what I'm saying? Next, my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. They are the suppliers for knife makers. They have all what you need, belts, abrasive steels, kilns, forges, press heat treating ovens, all that stuff. They're in Canada, and if you're a Canadian, you should definitely, without question, no questions asked, support my man Lawrence Lake. I just got a message from Lawrence, and I'm going to try to get it a little bit clearer in regards to he is having tariff issues. He's having customs issues that he does not want our his customers in the United States to have to deal with. It's becoming too difficult, so he's putting a pause on shipping to the United States. Now, I'm not 100% sure exactly what that means, but I am supporting of him and supportive of him. And however I can help Maritime Knife Supply, let me know. And basically what it comes down to is he just thinks it's too much for a lot of you guys to have to pay. And he's trying to figure out ways in which that he can get you guys the best service that Maritime has. And I'll get a little bit more information from him, but definitely support him because he's supporting a lot of great institutions like the New England School of Metalwork and Center for Metal Arts, which is both are very important to me, and he's very supportive of education. So I want you to do whatever it takes to support him, and he's also a facilitator. So it's not just selling everything that you need, but he'll get you squared away. So once again, many thanks to my friends at my friend Lawrence Lake at Maritime Knife Supply, and whatever we can do to help you, Lawrence, you know, you get a hold of me and we'll figure something out, and I am 100% behind you. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of Stabilo Knife Finishing Vise and T4 Sentinel Oil and more. So if you go to TrojanHorseForge.com, you can check out what they have. I know they have a lot of classes and stuff like that. And if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you can get 10% off everything. I know they have free shipping in regards to their vices, and they're great guys, and you should definitely support them once again. Next are my friends at Baker Forge, BakerForge.com, Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram, PS. Oh, well, I'll tell you P.S. after I finish it. So if you want to get some exotic steels, this is the stuff for you. Bronze my, copper my, all the different kinds of sand my. I don't got much better than Baker Forge, and they make it easy for you. If you're a stock removal guy, this is the thing. This is what you need to get in your life. So go to BakerForge.com, and if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you get 10% off. And P.S., all the Baker Forge knives I have on my website are now, between now and the end of Labor Day, so you got to act fast, 20% off. We are doing a Fancy Boy 20% off special on all the Fancy Boys. Allison said Fancy Boy special, so you know, I mean, our Baker Forge is the fanciest stuff we got. So go to, you know, go to Fader Knives for that shit. But if you're going to get some steel, go get it at Baker Forge. And then when it comes to etching it, you got to get that gator piss, you know, GatorPiss. Gator short for alligator, piss short for urine. You get the gator piss OG, you get the gator piss max, and you get the gator piss heavy. Gator piss max for that stainless. No more warm muriatic acid in your shop. You know, get yourself some of that. You can also get the gator piss of my friends at Texas Ferry Supply, texasferrysupply.com. Put in the promo code KnifeTalk10. You get 10% off there. Giant fans of those. I get all my rhino wet from Texas Ferrier Supply, if you need to know. All the knife making, blacksmithing, all that stuff you're going to need to get at Texas Ferrier Supply. Next, my friends at Total Boat, totalboat.com/fullblast is the direct link to get yourself some discount on all of their adhesive, paints, primers, polishing compounds. I am about to make some hybrid handle material. I just got a big block of this beautiful walnut burl, and I'm going to stabilize that, and I'm going to put it in I'm going to cut it up, stabilize it, I'm going to clean it all up, and then I'm going to stick it in a mold, and I'm going to use the Fathom Thick Set to make some hybrid handle material. You got it, guys. I'm the CrossFit of knife making. I'm all in. You know what I'm saying? That's a deep cut. Knife talk deep cut. So get yourself some of that Total Boat at totalboat.com/fullblast. All the links and the hyperlinks and the discounts are all in the show notes where you're listening to this. So, and if you're at Maker Camp, I'm going to be doing something with them at Total Boat. So definitely check all those guys out. If it's good enough for Keith Eason, Derek from Alden, Keith Johnson, Keith Mitchell, and that scoundrel Jimmy Duress, it's good enough for you. I want to thank my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. That's g.l.hansen_. That's g.l.hansen_ on Instagram. You should definitely check them out. They're the makers of G-Carta, which is that unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure. You get that Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mikey, Mahi, Radio Orm, G-Carta. Stuff is awesome, and now my customers are starting to ask for it by name. So it's getting you got to get it. You got to get it while you get it. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful stuff. It finishes great, and it looks terrific. Put some razzle-dazzle in your ding-dong. And if you go to gcarter.bigcartel.com, you can see it all there. I highly suggest checking out. Highly suggest checking out. Greg is the man, and Mikey's doing a great job. Next are my friends at Tormax, celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black TA sharpening system. I love my Tormax, and they're great. And I have a really nice conversation. I had a nice message from Jack Buckley, sent me a nice message. And then I talk to Carl all the time, Carl Friends. And I talk to the guys in Sweden every so often. It's a great company, and these are great people, and they have awesome customer service. And I think at some point in this fall, I'm going to have Carl's going to come over from Texas, and he's going to film a video. So hopefully we don't ruin it. You know what I'm saying? You know, hopefully I don't ruin it. So go to Tormek.com and check out what they got. You can go to Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. And for all you sharpening guys, I know a lot of you guys use belts. I used to use belts too. And one of the things people who tell you the belts are great for, they don't tell you that you get a lot of undercut when you're using a slack belt to sharpen your knives. It's just part of the way you're holding a knife. And I just want you to know that I know it because I did it. And I now have never gotten undercut again since I went back to using the Tormax. And I have faith, and nothing but faith in Tormax. Tormek.com. And then if you're in Australia and you're thinking to yourself, I'm listening to all these ad reads and I'm listening to all this machinery and parts and I really want to get involved, but I'm kind of nervous and I don't want to just spend all my money right at the spot, go to Nordic Edge. NordicEdge.com.au if you're in Australia. Take some classes. Take some blacksmithing classes, some bladesmithing classes, leatherworking, spoon carving, and then you can buy all your supplies there. Their file guide's amazing, P.S., and they actually, their file guide is my favorite file guide, the Nordic Edge file guide, and they have it actually at Maritime Knife Supply if you're in Canada. So definitely check out Nordic Edge, and if you really want to get involved, they have the guidance to help accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas. Look at that. TornicEdge.com ain't got much better than that. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives, phoenixabrasives.com. They have superior abrasive products, different companies. They have different products for every application, knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrication, floor sanding, crankshaft, belts, grinding, discs, cutting discs, flap discs, surface conditioning belts, and stuff like that. You get yourself over to phoenixabrasives.com, and guess what? Get yourself 10% off, and you put in FB10 at checkout. FB10 gets you 10% off. I like what they're doing over at Phoenix Abrasives, and they're supporting a lot of podcasts, and they're supporting good dudes, and they have great stuff. I've been getting some different types of belts from them over the years, and I've been very, very pleased with what they're offering. So definitely go get yourself some of them Phoenix Abrasives, and many, many thanks to all them, and thanks to you, and thanks to everybody else. And let me tell you who I really want to thank. I want to thank my guy. My guy is back. Ben Camone is a fucking awesome dude. I got a story to tell you, Ben, about what somebody referred to you as. Ben Camone is one of the best knife makers in the world. And I have proof, and he is my friend, and I'm glad he's back. Ben, how the hell are you?
Too much praise, but thanks. I'm great.
Hey, let me tell you how much. Well, number one, thanks for being so flexible in regards to the timing of everything. I know you and I had a couple weeks where it was, I appreciate your flexibility and your friendship,
No, always. Don't worry.
I appreciate that. But I want to tell you something. So about three weeks ago, I got an invitation to go to a film festival in Brooklyn, and it was Fingal Ferguson. Fingal Ferguson, this company did a short documentary on him. And he sent me a message. He said, hey, I'm going to be in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. I'd love it for you to come down and see this. I'd like to meet you. I'd never met him before. Yeah. And then I'd like to meet you. They're going to have a little event here, and they're going to watch this movie. So I went down to meet him, and it was great to see. He's a great guy, totally great guy. And we're talking to this famous brewer. His name is Garrett Oliver. Garrett Oliver, actually, I met him back in the 90s when he started Brooklyn Brewery, and he's like a pretty world-famous brewer. And he was talking about knife making because he just knows a lot of knife makers. He knows Jordan Lamotte, and he just started rattling off all these knife making guys, and he's talking about doing, having knife makers make stuff with like beer barrels. Nice. And, he was just talking about that. So he was talking about Austria, and your name came up, and we were talking about you. And I'm not, this is no bullshit. I'm telling you, this is the facts. This is exactly what happened. So Fingal was discussing you and your work, and he referred to you as the Bob Kramer of Europe. And you know what I said? I said, that's a pretty accurate description. Pretty accurate description. Yeah, it is.
Kind.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I don't know how to react to so much praise. I'm blushing a little bit.
I'm telling you. And you know what? When he said it, I was just like, look at you. And you know what? I'm not mad at that at all. I'm not. I second that that assessment. There wasn't jokes. There wasn't laughs. There wasn't anything. It was just like, when your name comes up, people stand at attention.
Look, I was just lucky with the initials. BK, I mean, it was just random luck. So that's...
Oh, you think that's why? Anagram? Okay, all right. Never even thought about that. How's your summer been?
Yeah, I was on vacation for 3 weeks, and amazing. It was my first day of work today, so I'm a bit laggy in the shop still, but... vacation was so great. We did so many things. I think those 3 weeks felt the longest so far. Sometimes when you're lazy, time won't go by. But sometimes when you're super busy, in retrospect, it feels like a long time as well. And that summer vacation really was great.
Where did you go?
The first week we were in Croatia and Istria. Visited a lot of great, like, ancient Roman cities, I think. Great architecture and that Mediterranean vibe and all that. We looked at three cities where a lot on the ocean, swimming and all that. And then we stayed in Styria in the mountains spontaneously for three nights, which was great too because it's on the way home. We were going by car. So we were just splitting the drive home spontaneously and just staying there, which was, just the spontaneous fact about it was pretty cool. Did a bit of sightseeing and swimming there as well. And then vacation at home or, coming down, I would say almost.
I don't get the it's funny. I never, my wife and I have been working, so my wife's works so hard, and some days, she's working 6 days a week, and I'm working some days 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And I don't really ever get the chance to have any kind of spontaneous vacation. And what we find ourselves doing is we kind of do like a forced vacation. And my first forced vacation was when I had my appendix out. And I was like, we're talking 25 years, when my daughter was just born. So it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was such a relief to like have this forced vacation. So we had, our daughter was only home for 3 weeks this summer. And my wife took a lot of time off, and I should have taken more time off, but
yeah,
it's very hard for me. It's very hard for me to kind of like, you know, we have so much going on, and it's like hard for me to kind of take myself away that I don't get the chance to do as much vacation as I'd like to.
I mean, I get that. Because for me, the vacation is kind of forced as well. So my wife and I just set a date way up front, you know,
yeah.
Because if you would ask me, do I have time for vacation right now? Of course, the answer is no. Everyone who is self-employed never has time for vacation. I think that's just a fact of self-employment. But then I'm very good at just, you know, drawing a line at some point, and then I'm not thinking about work when I'm on vacation at all, even though I'm self-employed, even though this is my passion also, you know, it's not just a job, it's my passion also. I like doing it, you know, but profession and passion, I would say. But then when I'm on vacation, that's just over with. I have to relax as well, and I'm just in the fuck it mindset. I'm leaving it all behind.
Once I get there, I am in. Like, it used to be like I had a hard time just kind of like relaxing. When my wife and I were younger, were much younger, and we were like, you know, 30 years ago when we first started going on vacations, we felt this need to have to kind of go everywhere.
Yeah.
And then we would come back from the vacation so tired of like all the sightseeing and all the running around. It was like, I need a vacation for the vacation. And then as we got older, we were just like, we wanted to not have to go to a lot of places. You know, like we used to go to this little island in the Caribbean called St. John. And it was really great because it was uninhabited for the most part. It was like not a lot of tourism there you could get away from a lot of tourists.
Yeah.
And the problem is you'd have to fly into this other island and then take a cab to the other side of this island and then take the ferry to the other island and then rent a car. It was like the odyssey to get to, you know, to get to where you wanted to go. And it was so exhausting. So now it's a mix because my wife is she's such a good tour director.
Yeah.
That it's hard to not do whatever she wants to do. But at the same time, it's just like, God, I just need to just do nothing. I just need to do nothing.
I would be good at that. At the same time, my boys are 5 and 9, and nothing doesn't really happen anyways. Because even at the beach, my wife gets a little downtime because she can lay in the sun. And I like to be in the water anyways, and the boys like it too. So that's all right with me. That's kind of downtime for me as well. Because even without them, I would be in the water at that time anyways.
Right.
But, you know, city vacations then, I'm thinking... You know, if you ask my boys, do you want to see that or that city, they would say no. But at the same time, the same response comes when I ask them if they want to go into the forest. And when we are there, they like it as well. And I can't always have them sit in front of the TV or tablet or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of... There is a saying in German, I don't know if there is the same in English, but you kind of have to be forced into your luck, you know? I don't know.
Oh, I like
it. And I think sometimes, at least I have fond memories of my youth in, you know, vacation time, going to the forest, looking at cities, even though at the time I probably didn't want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 You know what? There is something to be said about like, I know exactly what you're saying. It's the idea of like just going out and then you're finding a degree of interest and happiness and, you know, but in the beginning, you're just like, this is going to take a long time and maybe I don't want to be in the car for so long. And I completely understand.
Yeah. I mean, I trick us also. I mean, us four, I'm saying. So the boys always get tricked by, you know, they get ice cream if we are sightseeing in a city,
right.
Things like that. And we treat ourselves with good food. So the food was incredible. And that's kind of a treat and a nice restaurant.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Lux Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Lux Cafe.
Never been to, of course. So, you know, things like that. So,
One thing is I'm very fortunate that my wife is such a good tour director that over the years, you know, she plans these great things, and we're never like, it's never like, well, what are we going to do today? There's always like 10 or 15 different things, to the point where when my daughter was like by about 14 or 15, we were just like, she and I would look at each other and be like, well, mom's got it. Whatever she's going to come up with, it's going to be good. I mean, it's never been bad. It's like, that's like her record on like figuring things out. And we're kind of excited now because my daughter got accepted to a broad program in Japan.
Okay.
So my wife is all fired up because she's like, we're trying to plan. No, I mean, now we don't have even the dates of when she's going to be there, but we're just trying to orchestrate, you know, can we go? And if we go, what are we going to do? And, you know, this would be the biggest trip we've ever done. Yeah. So it would be kind of a neat situation.
How long is the flight from the U.S. or from New York, from the East Coast to?
Well, I think it's like 13 hours from California. So it's probably plus another six. So it'd probably be like close to, you know, pushing 20. It's going to be a long day at the office.
Yeah, that's similar for us. So I guess you would fly over the West Coast then, and we would fly eastwards, but it's similar. My friends, some friends of mine were to Japan, and they were speaking of it in the highest tones. You know, it's a great country.
No, this is something. And the cool thing is my kid figured out. She's like, this is an opportunity. One of the things about the college that she's at is they were very, very big on going abroad, and you know, like, and it was they gave these kids a long runway to apply for these. It's not easy to get into these programs, and she had to be accepted from her school, and then she had to be accepted from the Japanese program. So it's all pretty neat, and it was very merit based, which I, you know, which is obviously, you know, appreciative.
Yeah, and makes you proud. So, I'm guessing.
yeah. You know, it's like, I'll tell you what, and I'm envious of you because you have two boys, and the envious part is that that you have children with siblings. Because I don't have, my daughter is single. You know, no brothers or sisters. And I wonder how it would have changed. She used to say to us, she used to kind of feel bad that she never had a brother or sister, but frankly, it was an economic decision for us. I mean, it was like, you know, we were both very hardworking, you know, I would say we're middle class. My wife and I both had a very strong opinion on what we wanted to, you know, in terms of what we wanted to have as a family. And then it got to the point where it was like, well, we can have more kids, but it would be harder for us to make sure they get to the college that they want, or, you know, be able to help, you know, with them with school. And it was really like, I think it was one of those decisions. It was really, really hard on my wife because it was just like, you know, it was a reality of the fact that the hardest part about being in the United States is you don't want to be straddled with debt. Yeah. And we don't want to have a kid straddled with debt, frankly. So we did whatever we could to make sure that, you know, we saved enough money for her to go to college. And luckily for us, she got a very great merit scholarship, which was huge. That was one thing, unfortunately, part of, you know, our decision on only having one kid was the financial part of it. We just didn't want to make sure, our children, we could completely support them 100%.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I think it's always that kind of decision. I jokingly say to my wife, because sometimes she says, you know, the kids are so old, and as soon as she sees a baby, she tells me, that would be nice as well right now, something like that. And I'm always, I thought about it. The reality of it is, if you would have, hypothetically, have infinite amounts of money, you know, the amount of kids usually wouldn't bother you, I think. If you're into kids, if you have kids, then that's not the problem. The problem is always the money, right? Or time, which is equally the same in reality. Because if you have a lot of money, you have more time. Because you don't need to work as much, or not at all, or whatever. So, yeah, it's always a money decision. But I think you did the right thing. Your daughter turned out great. I love the conversations you have with your daughter, the podcasts.
I appreciate that. She's fantastic, and I'm very fortunate that we have the relationship that we have. And the other thing is that I really kind of worked on the idea of the crazy part is talking about being a parent is I'm 51. So my dad had me when he was 50. So the thought of having a 1-year-old right now or a 6-month-old right now is insanity. Is like, I can't think of anything worse. The idea that of having any type of infant in the house, I just can't even. I mean, I could barely. I wake up in the morning and everything creaks.
That baby should be your grandchild, really. I mean, almost.
Right.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, that's the thing. So the crazy part is like, because my dad was from this different generation, there was a lot of behavior that was really kind of slightly inappropriate, you know? And when I say inappropriate, it was just like kind of not the best way to raise a kid in the 80s and the 90s. So one of the great things is I've really kind of focused on is not passing along that kind of generational trauma to my kid. And I, you know, it's been a really, really remarkable situation. And now I'm saying this to you, you got a 9-year-old, a 5-year-old. I got a 21. My kid's about to turn 21 in December. And I feel as though, and I've said this for, I guess, since she got into college, I feel like I've hit the finish line. Like, I'll always be dad. But, like, I feel as though I've prepared her for life in the best possible way. With it, she's funny. She's smart. She's thoughtful. She's uses her head. She has friends who use their head. And I'm just not worried about her. And I feel as though I've already kind of crossed the finish line of my obligation.
Dude, every time you talk about that, I'm so much thinking of my boys, and I'm hoping I'll have, you know, 1/10 of that result. And because, you know, it's you if you can remember when she was younger, I'm sure you worried a lot about her future, about her friend circle and all that.
Right.
And always when you talk about that, I'm just hoping, please turn.
Well, can I just tell you one thing that, you know, I know a lot of people who have podcasts and a lot of people are gurus and they, you know, want to tell you how to live your life and they want to tell you what to do. The best thing, the one thing that, you know, it's talking and saying and, you know, is one thing, but the kids, they see what you do and they see how you are and you don't have to tell them everything. They see it. So they see you going to your shop. They see you coming home dirty. They see you doing all the work that you're doing. They see you doing it. They see you, you know, they see my kids saw my wife having to go to work on the Saturday when she didn't really want to on a beautiful, you know, summer day. She saw me coming back from working at a fabrication shop covered in dirt. Actually, she had to, when her school, there was a huge hurricane, she used to have to come to my shop. My boss would let her stay in the break room and that was probably the lowest part of me as a father, because it was a pretty disgusting, it was a real fast paced metal shop. It wasn't clean. It was pretty gross. And she's sitting in the break room with her iPad and she's seeing us grinding and she's seeing us putting the stuff together. And it was really hard for her, but I definitely felt like she saw how hard it was for us to work. And I think that was a real great transition for her into understanding that, you know, you can buy things and you can do things, but you have to see where the money comes from. And sometimes it's not as easy.
I mean,
as
you're totally right. And at the same time, I'm thinking my parents, you know, there were a lot of problems as in any family, but the upbringing or the education, I don't know how you would say that, how they brought us up, my sister and me, was...
Right.
You know, we had, in that sense, we had a great childhood, and that still didn't stop me from coming home that as drunk with 13 years old. So I'm thinking a lot of things can happen where, you know, the parents didn't do anything wrong by themselves. I mean, you know, kids.
I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, I came from a time where underage drinking was very normalized, and my friends and I was alone most of my, you know, we got fake IDs and we would just, you know, high school, we would go out and, you know, get bombed and stuff like that. And it got to the point where you know, that becomes this personal decision on, is this how I'm going to live the rest of my life or not? You know,
at some point,
high carbon pot.
When you're older.
Hopefully, you know, it's interesting because I was on a high carbon podcast with Keith Colby. Keith Colby's fantastic. Knife Material AT. If you are in Europe and you need to get some knife material, anything, go over to see Knife Material AT. Keith's unbelievable. And he's one of the guys who's involved with the knife event that you're involved in. We're going to talk about that. And we were talking about the idea of how you kind of get out into your shop and what keeps you motivated and stuff like that. And somebody said something along the lines of, sometimes I'm not feeling, you know, whatever, motivated. And we get that on Knife Talk all the time. And it's like the hilarious part is I want to be harsher when I say it. Some people don't realize. Some people have it too easy where they have the ability to just say, well, I'm just not feeling motivated. Yep. I'm not going to just do anything. If you've got a goal and you have this kind of goal in mind and you are hungry, some people aren't hungry. When I say hungry, it's not just about eating. It's about like some people are not hungry yep. for a type of success. And they're not built for being self-sufficient. They're not built for being yeah. self-employed. I'm always amazed at how people are raised. Because for me, I grew up in terms of one of the reasons why I was very fortunate to be able to be in this business is my father had a small business where I used to see his employees and some of them were wackos. My sister's bookstore, she had tons of employees and she used to complain about the employees. My dad used to complain. My other sister had a bookstore, was a contractor, and she had a small business and, you know, it was complaining. I was totally grew up with people, you know, understanding that you're not going to get the best employees sometimes and you have to figure out ways in which to motivate them. And you're going to have to figure out ways in which to work. And I never in my life thought, all right, well, it's going to be easy. You know, hire people, it's going to be easy. I knew it was going to be hard. And I just don't feel like there's a lot of people who understand that you're either 100% into it or you're not.
No, totally.
Because when I look at you, I mean, your work is unbelievable. I mean, we made this joke that you were, you know, not a joke. I mean, you know, you're very proficient. You're very, your work is beautiful. The monolith knives are unbelievable. Your forge knives are unbelievable. I see when I went to Barcelona, I saw that one collaboration you did with Florentine, and I mean, you couldn't sell them fast enough. I mean, your work is just unbelievable. One of the things I appreciate about you is that you've seen some of your videos where you do all these jigs and you have all these systems in place. You're very, very motivated to succeed.
I would say so. I mean, I couldn't imagine getting into it with it not being motivated would almost feel like getting into it without a goal, right? Like just wandering right. around. Or I couldn't even imagine how that would feel. So if you have a goal, I would think you're motivated, and if you want to solve some problems and want to get work done, then it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? I don't know, but I mean, of course, success is dependent on so many more things. A lot of luck is.
But success is also success. When I say success, I mean there are obviously levels to success. I mean, my opinion of success is at the end of the day, you feel good about yourself in regards to the, you know, I'm going to go the lowest rung of what success is, which is you had an idea, you did what you said you were going to do, and then you executed.
I think that's pretty important because the sky is the limit with success. And you're, you know, a bottomless pit in regards to what you want to achieve, you will be always disappointed. And I'm similar to you. I don't have the highest goals. I'm not a fucking Jeff Bezos. You know, some people set that as the goal almost, right? And I'm thinking, well, if you can sustain a good living and you're happy with what you're doing, I mean, try to get more, of course, but, you know, be happy with what you've got and be not thankful. That's the wrong word I'm searching for. Yeah. Grateful. Thank you.
Grateful. Yeah. Grateful. Yeah. It's weird. You know, the funny thing is, you know, talking about, I mean, just about my business is I kind of mentioned this before, but I've always seen this as a metal shop first and foremost, as opposed to just like a knife making shop. And we just actually we're finishing off the contract. We're going to be doing some prototyping for a guy who's trying to get in the knife business. And, you know, it's interesting because I see it. And, you know, we're trying to work out pricing. We're trying to figure out the best way that he can be squared away. And at this point, it's just the prototype and stuff. And we keep talking about, like, you know, trying to figure out ways in which we can help this guy and get him squared away and get the design right. And I want to do right by him and also do right by us. But in the meantime, I say, you know, I don't have to. One job is not my career. You know, I don't, that was one thing that my old boss at this metal shop used to say. He says, the problem with a lot of metal workers is they get a job and they sit on it because they want to kind of, you know, milk it for all it's worth. And the problem is that's no way to do business. Sometimes, and a lot of knife makers fall into this situation where they're trying to sit on something and then just kind of milk it for all it's worth, as opposed to just realize that, you know, we don't have to get, you know, the top of the, you know, every nickel and dime. And sometimes getting the work done, getting the work in the shop and out the shop is just as important. I mean, it's obviously I'm just speaking for myself at this point, but like I always refer to it as I want to run jobs to the shop and just kind of keep the ball rolling.
I have a very similar opinion. And you know what I mean? Think some people also strive for perfectionism. And oftentimes you're just making it worse. So I think it's a two-sided coin almost, that or in that sense it's double beneficial to just draw a line again at some point and say that's that, and try to, you know, sell it, get rid of it or whatever, and don't obsess into it too much.
This is a good segue into the show we're going to be on this charity event. Do you want to just talk a little bit about this charity event?
And I'm thinking, instead of boring the listeners, we could put up a link in the show notes. We just mention what it is and say a few words about it. And then everyone who is interested can click on that link and see what it is, instead of talking like, you know, 1 hour just about that, and maybe people, you know,
it's just an
event where 20 knife makers make a kitchen knife, all more or less in the same profile, everyone in his own style, and they donate it to a charity that benefits children. And you can buy tickets. You increase your chances by buying more tickets. One ticket is, I think, $10. And you can participate. You get the chance to win a knife, but also, of course, you're supporting children in need. So that's a double win in my books. And yeah, click on the link in the description and we will update you on our Instagram profiles and possibly newsletters, and you can sign up for a newsletter there as well if I'm informed correctly. And yeah, I think.
Does Keith talk about it a lot on his podcast?
Yeah, High Carbon. They constantly talk about it, but we were invited on the Hustle and Grind podcast yesterday. We talked a little bit there as well. So
okay.
Yeah, I mean, Keith does a great job. He's very, he and Meerschaert, a German knife maker, who has good connections to the charity, which is important because the charity helps us so much. It's illegal in Germany and in Austria to do a raffle. I think in New York it's illegal as well, right? Yeah, exactly. You know what
they
I mean.
Say waffle. They think changing one letter is going to prevent being discovered. This is the craziest thing in the world. The police don't know what you're talking about.
It's similar IRS in Austria has no and idea. In Germany, and so it's important to directly be able to work with that charity. Otherwise, you couldn't make a raffle, right? And the raffle concept is very important because I've done auctions before, and you know, at some point, people are just out. I don't have a lot of money to spend. So if you get at a certain amount of money, people tune out, obviously. So, and at a raffle, there are even some people that are just, you know, feeling lucky and they will buy a ticket. And in that sense, it's not just gambling. It's you're anyway supporting the kids. So it's, yeah, that's the main thing. And we've got great knife makers. I should mention it's 20 knife makers of the highest grade and really, really top notch guys.
And me. The highest grade and me. And then I'm in there.
Let's say 18.
this is your design. Here's the interesting thing. All right, so I get a message from Keith Colby, Knife Material AT. I've known Keith for a long time. Keith's fantastic. Once again, fantastic. And he even told me on the on the podcast he tricked me into doing it. And I'd say he tricked me into doing it, except for the fact that you're such a huge part of it. So every one of the knife makers gets a template that you designed. And then we make our version of more or less our version. And it's funny. I said to Keith, I said, how far can we go? How far around the, what are our guidelines in terms of, can I fool around a little bit on this? And he goes, no, you just got to use, Ben's template. Don't, cause I was, I had some ideas and I was just like, I'm gonna fuck around with this thing. And he's, for some reason, Keith Colby is from Massachusetts, but he has like completely absorbed. I guess he's Austrian now. So yeah, he used to be from Massachusetts and now he's 100% Austrian. So there was no deviation from the plan, which I respect.
But I mean, if it was up to me, you could do whatever, just don't tell anyone and just deliver the knife as it is and it will be there. And at the end of the day, just the charity counts. And if people are interested in whatever you deliver, even if it's a cleaver or whatever, then perfect. I mean, job done. But I know Keith is, that's the Austrian in him.
I got to give Keith a lot of credit. He also met me at Blade Show and then he kind of put the screws to me to be on his podcast. I'm done being on other people's podcasts. And I'm saying this with peace and love. Because number one, I do too much. And it's like, no one wants to hear my shit anymore. Between knife talk and this, it's just like, it's just enough. But then, I go on these podcasts and then some people, he got a guy on there that I know who I think is a little, he's been listening to knife talk for a long time. He gets a little too familiar with me and he's just like fucking testing me the whole episode. So I want you to listen to my episode on the High Carbon podcast. Love Keith. Love Albert, love Baltic Blades, but I don't know what happened to Baltic Blades because he got a little bit too comfortable with me. He got a little too comfortable, if I'm being honest.
That motherfucker.
And I'm not going to say anything terrible. I was going to say some horrible things about him, but the worst thing I'm going to say about him is just he was being silly. So I'll say that. He was being silly. And this is the problem with these podcasters, I swear to God. These maker podcasters, they don't think about the fact that they should be focusing on how this sounds to the listener, not about like making these obscure inside jokes to get me riled up. So you can listen to, go listen to my episode for, by all means, go listen to my guys. They used to be the Work For Podcast European division. And then they made the right move and to change it over to the High Carbon podcast. So,
which is a horrible name. We have to say that.
Is that? Do you think so?
It's so boring. I asked Paulie actually because I talked to him a lot and I asked him, is there any deeper sense I don't get? Any wordplay? Anything funny or I don't know anything. Give me anything because it's so generic. It's so on the nose. High carbon. Yeah, I mean. What else? Why don't you call it kitchen knives?
I mean, how much more on the nose can you be than knife talk? I mean, for Christ's sakes. I mean, that is the most on the nose podcast name.
That's true,
I mean,
but it's institution might be over, in regards of in this right. community, the podcast within our community. I mean, outside probably not, but within the community, it's almost an institution and it's been there for so long that I wouldn't ever question that name. Now that you say
wow.
it, if the name was new, probably I would criticize right. it the same way.
Right.
But since I'm very used to it, and maybe that might be the case. I mean, I'm just breaking some balls. With High Carbon as well. But my initial response was, what a shitty name. You should have picked one of mine.
I like the font. I think the font is very good. I like the font.
Yeah, no. I mean, they are... good with that. I think generally I like that podcast. I'm a lot on that show as well, but I like listening to the guys. They're a bit more corrosive, a bit less professional than yours. And I enjoy that sometimes.
More corrosive. I don't know what happened with Baltic. I tell you what, I'll give you. He's a good dude. He's been listening to Knife Talk for a long time. And then I don't know what happened. You know, here's the problem with all these podcasters. They listen to Knife Talk, then they think to themselves, I could do this. And then they get a mic in front of them, and then they just, like, I don't know if they drink before they go on, or I don't know if they're nervous before they go on. But they never think about how the podcast would sound to the listener, you know, the audio experience. And then it's just like, it's sometimes it becomes all of them. And I'm not just giving it to, I am with Keith all day and Albert and all those guys. But I don't know what it is about these maker podcasts. It's just sometimes I just want to shake them around a little bit.
But you know? You're coming from the perspective of doing radio. I mean, I wasn't kidding around with you having a more professional podcast and setting it up that way.
Wow.
No, I mean, you talk about that, and I think you do a great job on that, yeah?
Wow.
But they don't come on it with that mindset. They just fuck around and record it.
Then it makes me wonder, it's the same thing as about guys who learn how to make knives on the internet or on YouTube, and then they want to be taken seriously. It's just like, I it's hard sometimes, and I'm not fucking around. I'm not, you know, I'm not giving Keith and those guys a hard time. It's just like, part of me is just like, what is your direction? You know, it's the same thing when you hear these guys are in their shops and they don't have any motivation. When you're doing the podcast, I mean, what is the direction of the podcast? And since I started Knife Talk, and before I did Knife Talk, when I was with Nico and we were doing the Downward Spiral, yeah. I felt as though the most important thing is that every episode, when you're talking to each other, you're also talking to but you're not really talking to the listener, but you want the listener to understand what's going on. So anytime something new is brought up, you really need to kind of backfill the information. So when they're listening for the first time, then they're in it, they're completely in it. Perfect example. And I'm trying not to say anything terrible there. I was listening to a podcast with some famous guys on it, but they both follow me on Instagram. They're great guys in the cooking technique world and cooking, you know, what do they call it? The cooking sphere or cooking, whatever they call it now.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And it was because the interviewer didn't understand how to ask the question and listen. So you have this guy, all right, fuck it. I like Brad Leone a lot. I think Brad Leone's fantastic. I think he's fantastic. He's got a new podcast called Lay It On Me. I think he's funny. I think he's approachable. I think he's great. And he had Jacques Pepin on. And Jacques Pepin is like, I mean, this dude is a legend. And he knows how to talk. He's been doing it for fucking like, he's 90 years old. He's been doing it for like 60 years. Yeah. You know, he's been on TV for a long time. He knows how to talk.
Yeah.
And I love Brad. But he was like, he would ask a question, and then before he couldn't ask the question, he was just stumbling and adding and compartmentalizing and like extrapolating. And it was just like, dude, just ask the question and fucking let him go. I mean, you got the best guy to talk there is. And it was driving me crazy because it's just like, some guys, you put a mic in front of them and they think that they're going to be the greatest interviewer of all time.
I mean, I think they learn through time.
Have to.
I mean, if he's new, and I think similar to the high carbon guys, I have to correct myself. I mean, they take it seriously in the sense of quality. They all got good mics. I know Albert puts a lot into editing. He cuts out all the pauses, and that
does.
Yeah, yeah. And that made it way more listenable than in the beginning. So in that sense, they are professionals or you know, striving to be. But I'm just saying they don't come at it with a certain you know, topic list, oftentimes not, at least, and they are just shooting the shit in a sense, oftentimes I feel like, or inviting a guest and then maybe preparing a few questions, but not to the extent of maybe having 5 follow-up questions prepared or something like that, whereas I feel like you could do something like that. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's just a different mindset. But yeah, I mean, they're like 100 episodes in, and the other guy you just talked about, I would guess that he will get some criticism and then learn from that. and maybe do a better job next time.
I don't know. It's a weird situation because the podcasting world is so overwhelming. And it's like when we started Knife Talk, we were higher up in the ranks.
Yeah.
And then when the pandemic hit and everyone started getting microphones, I remember a knife. Actually, you and I both know this guy, a knife. We'll leave it at that. A knife guy. He invited me on his podcast to be a guest. And he didn't even have a podcast yet. You know, he didn't have anything yet. He didn't have anything. He just wanted me to be a guest on his podcast that didn't even exist. And what happened was so many people started podcasts, and then it just kind of washed away. It washed away a lot of, you know, really good podcasts. And the problem is like now it's so hard for me to listen to any podcast because it's just like I give people a lot of respect to kind of who keep going.
Yeah.
And I get invited on podcasts that and then they've kept going and stuff like that. Do they get better? I'm not 100% sure, but it's like the idea is you want to maintain a degree of it being listenable. I've talked too much shit. Go listen. I mean, I'm sure Albert is totally like edited, and I might be totally wrong, but I'm sure that it was edited beautifully. And Keith is my guy. And anything Keith needs, hey, look, I sent the knife his way. He was the first person to get the knife for the charity.
Look, I just can't. I mean, I like listening to the podcast, but I like some, you know, corrosive entertaining shit sometimes, and they are just not shy, as you've seen with Paulie. But I can tell you all of those three guys are great guys. I mean, and Paulie,
I believe
Paulie,
you.
I met all of them, actually Paulie one time, but the other guys more than once in person. Yeah, just great crew. But yeah, Paulie can be harsh interview, let's say.
He just wanted to fuck with me. I mean,
I'm so curious to listen to that.
Yeah, well, see, that this is the, now before anyone gets upset over at High Carbon, this is what's called a radio tease. This is people to get people over to go listen to the High Carbon podcast. I know at one point I was talking and then I saw in the show notes Baltic Blades wrote something, and then I wrote something kind of like, you know, joke, you know, in the show notes, and I said why would you waste a joke when no one else can read this, no one else will know that you're taking a shot at me. If you're gonna say it, you know. And so I wouldn't say it got heated. I would say that it was like, you know, ball breaking, but at the same time I was at the end of it, I had a nice conversation with Keith, but part of me is just like, yeah, don't do these fucking shows anymore. It's like you just get yourself fired up, and it's just like it's enough already.
I mean, Keith is walking on thin ice. I told him on the Hustle and Grind podcast.
Is he?
No, yo, I'm just thinking. I told him that he's one sentence away from you blocking him because he talked you into the
me?
Yeah, he talked you into the charity, and I kind of told him that, you know, you had him by the balls. You're the kind of guy similar to me, I think, who is just too friendly to say no if you ask them in person.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm sure he didn't appreciate that.
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't. Respectfully, I, you know, the funny thing is that's how people get me. You're like, I'm really slippery unless you like see me in real life. And that's how the Hustle and Grind guys got me on at one point, because I think Ryan was just saw me and he's like, oh, you think you'd come on the podcast? And I was just like, what am I going to do in front of other people? Say no. So it was just like, you know, whatever. And then, you know, yeah, Keith got me good. He had the broken arm. He had the arm in his sling. And it's like, you think you'd come on the podcast? I'm like, yeah, of course.
Also, he kind of looks like
your fucking broken arm.
He kind of looks like Timo Eminem. So how can you say no?
No, I mean, I was just like, I was around other people. And, you know, if you get me in front of other people, and then it's just hard for me to say no, but you're 100% right. You're 100% right. I'm just like, oh, God, I got to do another one. No, I'm just kidding, obviously. So we can talk about knife stuff, or we could do a little bit of weird news, whatever your heart's desire.
Hey, just one question I wanted to ask. How long is your daughter going to Japan? Sorry, that's going back to the other topic, but I was interested.
Well, it's going to be here's the great part. Is that she's going to do the fall semester at her school, and then she's going to come back for Christmas, Christmas holiday. But instead of going back to school, she'll be home until like March.
Ooh, that's great.
So I think it's like 2 months in Japan, 2 months, 6 weeks,
and,
2 months.
And what would be the like goal, to learn the language or?
Well, no, she's taken 2 years of Japanese. Like, that was part of the thing, is she had to actually, there were language requirements that she had to do. So she's taken 2 years of Japanese, and she did really well. Cool. So, that kind of makes it more interesting. But, they have the program that she wants to do. It's called, Urban and Environmental Policy. They have a great program in Japan. So, like, that's part of the thing. It's like, whatever you declare your major, if you want to go abroad, you got to go to a course or a program that will reflect your major.
Okay.
Too.
Yeah, makes sense. And which city?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tokyo.
Damn.
Yeah. So,
but
yeah, and my Instagram is flooded with things to do and not to do in Japan. And the worst part is this is like all these reels telling me that Japanese people are sick of all the foreigners coming in, and I'm just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Lila, you're going to have to fucking chill out when you get out there, you know? You know, and I'm afraid of all my tattoos, and what am I going to do about that? And I'm just like, I'm going to wear a long sleeve shirt the whole time.
Oh, you look like a chakuza to them.
Well, or just an asshole. I don't care. I mean, I don't think I'm going to look like a yakuza. I think I'm going to look like a fucking asshole. So that's what I'm trying to avoid. I need to try to avoid that.
Tokyo is such a big city that I would think you could stay a year and not see one fourth of what you could have seen. Yeah, I bet.
I mean, I believe you. I believe it. We have some friends in Japan, so we have some friends in Tokyo. I have a gallery dealer who's a friend of mine who's over there, and I might go see him. And then we have some other people, and we'll see. It might not even happen. We might not be able to afford to go. Yeah. So it's like it's kind of a big operation. That's to be the.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
TBD. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it'll be great. I mean, I've never been to Asia. My wife's been in Nepal, but I mean, that's about it. So I've never been to Asia before. So I think it'd be, it's a bucket list situation. I almost went to Japan. I was actually in a sculpture competition back in the day. Do you remember when the earthquake happened, and then the tsunami happened, and then the nuclear. Yeah, Fukushima, yeah. Right. Fukushima. Well, I was supposed to have one of my sculptures was going to go there, and I was very close to getting in. I got rejected. But it turns out that the gallery was in Fukushima. So my sculpture would have been irradiated, among other things. So I missed out.
Glow in the dark.
I missed out. Yeah, I missed out. I totally missed out. That would have been unbelievable. So here's your choices. We could talk about knives. We could talk about if you want, or we could talk about some topical full blast news.
Yeah, no, news.
Okay, good. All right, guys. I got a few of my guys who come in. You know, Ben Snure will be back soon. And I like to, we just kind of like investigate these weird non-political news stories. I don't know, fucking good. I mean, it's so hard to find weird news that isn't political.
Yeah.
So I do everything I can to my listener to be as non-political as possible, just because you've had enough. We've all had enough. And it's just like, let's not do that. So most of the weird news I find nowadays is normal, regular news. So here's a pretty interesting one. This is called the Death Cap Mushroom Trial. Nope. Have you heard of this? The Death Cap Mushroom Trial. How a murder plot unfolded and how the killer tried to cover her tracks. This is a crazy story because, so if you're listening to this and you're thinking, what's going on? We read weird news. Erin Patterson was found guilty of murder of her parents-in-law and an aunt who died days after she served them beef Wellington for lunch. Mother of two, Erin Patterson, 50, was convicted of a 2023 murder of her parents-in-law, and the Patterson sister, along with attempted murder of Reverend Ian Wilkinson, Heather's husband. She served guests beef Wellington, know it contained deadly death cap mushrooms, also known as Anamita phala or something or other. After a 9-week trial in Victoria, this is in Australia, the jury concluded unanimously that she poisoned the guests on purpose and rejected the defense that the deaths were a terrible accident. Aspects of the case, which included last month, were subject to a gag order, but the details have now been made public. Here's what you need to know about the trial. Patterson's husband rejected the invite out of fear. So the woman's ex-husband was rejected the pet. So here's what happened. This woman and her husband were divorced. The woman invites, the ex-wife invites the ex-husband's parents and family over
totally
for dinner.
Totally normal, yeah.
Totally normal. Even though they're ex, yeah. And then the husband rejects the invitation. And then so she feeds his parents this food, and they all die. Patterson invited the four victims for lunch at her home. Her estranged husband, with whom she shares two children, was invited but didn't attend. The jury was not told why he rejected the invitation, but now it's been revealed that he, in the pretrial hearing, that he did so out of fear. "I thought there'd be a risk she'd poison me if I attended," he told the court months before the trial. He said he believed Patterson, from who he'd been estranged since 2015, had tried to poison him with her cooking three times in the past, and therefore he stopped eating the food that she prepared. He said that the previous alleged poisonings had occurred on family camping trips after he had eaten dishes including penne bolognese pasta, chicken korma curry, and a vegetable curry wrap. Mr. Patterson claimed he became seriously ill after the meals, but no poisons were ever found. He said he didn't believe anyone else would be at risk, but he said he didn't believe anyone else would be at risk from her cooking. On Friday, the court ruled in favor of the lawyers representing the media, who sought to overturn the gag order. During the trial, text messages read out that Patterson found her husband's decision she was very disappointed that she had spent all this time and money preparing this special meal. Mr. Patterson told the court he had listed them as financially separated on a tax return, which triggered a series of child support payments that meant he would no longer have to pay for the two children's private school.
So,
and then he, speaking through tears, Mr. Patterson said, "I was sure she was
my
upset."
My inner Columbo alarm bells go off immediately.
Go ahead. Love it.
I have to say, with a hanging eye and in a trench coat with a hat.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
If I was seriously concerned that my ex-wife would poison me, there is no way in hell my parents visit her. So how did he let that happen if he doesn't have if he isn't in on it? I mean, maybe there was some insurance thingy going on.
To kill his own parents?
Yeah, it sounds weird, but on the other hand, would you let your parents go to the ex-wife you're not going to because you're seriously concerned that she will poison you? I mean, if you're not coming, it must be serious.
There's a couple things, because I think that you also have to take into account that the two poisonings or the three poisonings before, because they weren't registered as being poisoned. Those three times, it wasn't registered as being poisoned. And maybe he said he might have said all that stuff after the fact that they were dying. Yeah. Like, this woman cooks and somebody gets sick three times. All right, well, maybe it's just me. And then here's the crazy part. So let's just say she tried poisoning him three times and he was just like, "I'm not eating this fucking bitch's food." That ain't happening no more. I'm not eating anything she's going to cook. I can't do it. And then apparently it was a very sudden invitation, and there was no reason given for the lunch. And I remember talking to Heather, wondering why all the sudden invitation. But the parents were, I guess he said, "I wonder why they're inviting you." And apparently the parents were very happy to be invited. Patterson said the mushrooms were a mixture of button mushrooms from the supermarket and dried mushrooms from an Asian grocery store, and they were hand labeled packets.
And
he said he remembered his wife pointing this out after they became ill.
Because that would have been my next question: how would she justify that being an accident? But
she had all the packaging of the mushrooms. The Reverend said that he said that he and his wife ate their full servings while Don ate his own and his only half. The meal, the Patterson said they'd been diagnosed with cancer, suggesting the lunch was put together so they could. It's a weird story, man. The crazy part is like the crazy part is this woman is this woman's fucking crazy. While on the stand at the beginning of June, Patterson said she might have accidentally included foraged mushrooms in the fatal lunch. She said she brought expensive ingredients and research ideas to find something special to serve. She said she deviated from the chosen recipes to improve the bland flavor. However, she denied that a series of photographs showing mushrooms placed on the scale were a fatal dose.
Huh.
Now, here's the crazy part. The crazy part is she'd done this shit three times already. And then she obviously got this guy so sick that they actually wondered if he was poisoned. Now, recently, I've been talking with Mareko Momasi. He talks about foraging mushrooms all the time. And we have like mushrooms that people forage around here. And I actually have a story of a friend of mine who is an obnoxious mushroom forager. I've been foraging mushrooms, and I know all about it. And you know, in France, it's amazing because if you're foraging mushrooms, you can bring the mushrooms to. Craig told us from Knife Talk, told us that you could bring the mushrooms to a pharmacy, and they'll tell you if they're poisonous or not. And but here, it's like all these guys, they know everything. Oh, I'm a mountain man. I know the poisonous mushrooms. So this guy, we're at a party, the guy goes, I know all about it. And he's like, I don't know what happened. Last week, I was in the hospital for 7 days with, like, kidney failure. Apparently, I misjudged one of the foraged mushrooms and almost died. And we're listening to this story, and he was, like, really fucked up. And my wife was just like, dude, he almost shut his kidneys down. This dad almost died from mushrooms. And then after the conversation, he starts telling me what I need to look for foraged mushrooms. I'm like, no, bro.
I mean,
you're done. You are not an expert anymore. You're not allowed to tell me.
It's weird, though,
because
there are some mushrooms where they have very close parallels with other mushrooms or even some plants, you know, that wild garlic plant. I don't know what it is in English, but, you know, where you... I don't know the English name. But anyways, there is a something you can mistake it for. But if I'm not sure, I'm picking a mushroom, which... can't be mistaken for anything else. And there are some of that. Right?
Here's the real issue. The question is how much of the fucking lunch did she eat?
Good question.
See, that's what I would want to know. That's what I would want to know. It's just like, is everybody eating? Or is she just like, she's figured out a way to make sure that the poison mushrooms are only on one side of the dish? Or if she's not eating at all, I'm done. Enjoy this wonderful special meal. I've had enough. I'm not hungry. Then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, now this woman's obviously done this in the past.
What would be the motivation, though? I mean, I'm saying insurance fraud from him as well, because he didn't go, yet he did let his parents go, which is fishy to me.
I think that maybe he didn't consider that she would be. I think that here's what I think. In a situation like this, and I could be overstretching, but I would think that if they have shared custody, he most likely has if he has a will, his kids, if he cut her off in regards to their schooling, like so he just cut her off in regards to the private school. If he dies, I mean, if they're his heirs, then the children would be able to be, you know, I'm just speculating once again, but they would be entitled to his estate. So then all of a sudden, you know, the mother says, well, these kids are obviously too young to be dealing with this estate, and, you know, I'll be their executor. And then next thing you know, all of a sudden now you're all squared away because she's the guardians of those kids now.
Yeah, but then
the parent dad's out of the way. Now, why listen, you know what? As far as murder plots go, that's not the worst I've ever heard in terms of just like, you know, let's fucking poison this. I made a mistake with mushrooms. My bad. You know, you get manslaughter in the United States. I could imagine you could get manslaughter, but you might not necessarily
get
him,
murder. But then you know, to just kill the parents instead is just.
fucking wacko, because now all of a sudden he's going to lawyer up, and now she's never going to see those kids again, and she's going to go to jail. And then the kids are boned, because now all of a sudden mom's in the paper for trying to poison everybody, and now all of a sudden Nana and Papa are done. Aunt whatchamacallit, she's out the door. They're all like toes
and
up.
And maybe it was a genuine person. Accident, because those wild mushrooms are gathered by more or less normal people out of the forest who then sell it, and then it goes to the supermarket. I mean, it could have been a mistake. It's not inconceivable.
It could. It doesn't. I mean, this is a big story in Australia. And you know those Australians, everything's poisonous over there. I mean, it's just like from the mushrooms, the snakes, the spiders, the flies, who knows? So it's just like maybe, you know, it's a very exciting story in Australia. But in my opinion, I don't know.
It's interesting, though.
Sounds fucking weird.
It's weird.
Okay, here I'm going to give you some options. We have experts explain why young lads always have their hands down their trousers.
I know why.
There's that one. but I don't think you do, frankly. I read it. I'm just like slightly surprised. And then there's also the zoo asks people to donate their small pets nice for too. Food for captive predators.
Yeah.
We can do both if you want.
Yeah, let's go trousers.
You want trousers first? All right, let's go trouser snake. This is a weird one. So experts explain why young lads always have their hands down their pants. If you find yourself out in the world, you might have noticed a lot of young men have their hands. Oh, shit. It's trying to give me okay. So it turns out that men of all ages spend a decent amount of time each day with their hands down their pants. And it's not just that they're checking whether they're still there or not. Research from 2021 found that men stick their hands down their pants on an average of 7 times a day, while around a quarter fondle their penises more than 10 times a day. And one crotch-cupping chap told the survey he had his hands down over 50 times a day. One hopes they all remembered to wash their hands after having rummaged around inside their trousers. But one fears that not every gentleman adheres to the high standards of hygiene. Now, we have an idea for how much men folk are laying their hands on their meat. Blah, 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 blah. Let's get to the – all right. Body language expert Martin Brooks told the Times there are 3 main reasons why young lads would slide their hands down their trousers and rest on their undercarriage. Number one, to release oxytocin. Listen to this shit. This is some high-level horseshit right here, Ben. The first reason is apparently a displacement activity done in order to dispel the nervous energy, as physical contact releases the hormone oxytocin, which makes a person feel good and has been referred to as the love hormone. Other experts...
simply from touching it, I don't buy it. Because to feel the touch of a human, quote-unquote... It's like tickling yourself. It doesn't work. I mean, it would have to be another human, right?
Yeah.
Or am I?
No.
It's like petting yourself. That doesn't do anything.
I don't necessarily think they're trying to get horny. I think that, other experts have said that your hands down your pants does make you feel better and can help dispel anxious feelings. Although, of course, some bloke with his hands down his pants might make others anxious. Somewhere in the dredges of this humble's author, there's also because of societal norms. Meanwhile, Brooks says the second big reason was a change in societal norms, as he explained, that young men could be drawing attention to their masculinity in new ways. He says that a status thing is suggesting that that's what's on my mind. And then there's an act of rebellion. He also suggests that an increased exploration below the belt could be an act of rebellion as a way of showing someone they play by nobody's rules but their own. Brooks says previously people smoked and it was not necessarily because they liked it. I didn't, but it was a way of telling older people I'll do what I like. And then the last is some form of because of the pandemic. Some poor police officer told the Times that he'd seen it happen more often since the pandemic. Recently saw a man with his hands down his pants at a branch of Starbucks, suggesting that since the pandemic, people had increasingly done things that used to be more socially unacceptable, such as popping into the shops in their pajamas or playing music on a public transport without headphones. He said lots of people that were indoors have become, it's become more acceptable. In general, it would be better if you reserve the hands down your pants action for the privacy of your own home, ideally to be done close proximity to a sink and somewhere to wash your hands. And now you know why so many young lads have their hands on their pants.
I didn't understand at first, the first half of the story, that we're talking public.
Yeah.
I immediately thought we're talking in the privacy of your own home or something like that.
Oh, no.
Public is
very
alarming, and I've never seen that.
No, I mean, apparently this is very common. Listen, I'm always surprised at how poor mannered younger people are. Like, I am shocked at how ill mannered a lot of young people are. But the hands on their pants is definitely one of those, you know, markers of the social decline of social norms. I mean,
or just stupidity. I mean, it's, to me, it could be a sign of, I just don't give a fuck. Just do whatever. Pick your nose.
Recently, I was walking the dogs, and there was a guy in front of me, maybe a half a block away, and he just took his empty glass bottle and just kind of like hook shot, did a basketball hook shot, where he just hooked it into the street and just laughed, and it just exploded in the street.
Daylight or in the night?
And he didn't give a fuck. And he looked back, it was the middle of the day. It was afternoon. I was walking the dogs like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was like, are you fucking kidding me? But I mean, it's like, at the same time, I am from New York, and, you know, scolding people doesn't work anymore. Like, scolding people is like, always has been and always will be. Scolding people, especially in New York City or New York in general, is a recipe for a fucking problem. So I steer clear, but at the same time, societal norms have definitely changed, and I am amazed, and I think part of it is also, I think social media has really kind of emboldened people to behave in manners that they wouldn't normally do. I mean, the videos Ben Snore and I send each other videos, probably about, I would say Ben and I send each other 15 reels a day of people doing crazy stuff, totally crazy stuff, and it's like I feel as though there's this real need for any type of fame or virality or something interesting to happen. And if it happens to be because,
they stick their hand down their pants, we as normal people have to realize that and be conscious of that. It's a very, very small minority that actually acts out like that. But they appear to be a bigger number, I think. Because you're not noticing the 2 million people you've seen before that didn't have their hands down their pants, but you're definitely noticing the one guy who has in public at daylight. So
it is so hilarious even reading and thinking about the fact that, like, and here's the other thing is, I also am very well aware that when I was younger, I looked at older people and I was just like, I don't give a fuck what you think. And the older people used to look at me and they would be like, oh, you young guys don't know what you're talking about. And now I'm in this position of looking down at young people and thinking how stupid they are. Somebody sent me like a list of was telling me all the new slang words that kids use. And I'm just like, none of these are any good. I mean, they're all stupid. And it's like, well, you're too old. And I'm like, you kids don't know anything. And then all of a sudden, I'm that old guy who, when I was younger, would have been like, fuck you, grandpa. I don't give a shit what you think. I'll stick my hand down my pants. Dude, I'm always surprised at like how, there's all sorts of different things. The hand down the pants is hilarious. But the real thing is, you could talk about the different thing, people wearing their pants down, you see their underwear and all that stuff and stuff like that. But the fact that they took scientists and wondered why people are grabbing their dicks, and it's like to release oxytocin is hilarious. It's like, it's almost like giving people some sort of scientific reason. Back in the day, back in the 80s, you see these, like Run DMC and these rock, these rap guys, and they're just grabbing their crotches, or, heavy metal guys, and they're just all grabbing their crotches, and it's just so grotesque. And now you're seeing these fucking kids on the subway just sticking their hands way down.
I mean,
their pants.
I would question if the,
right
if,
in there.
The, if the study is even real.
Hilarious.
Because if it's just relying on questioning people, if some random guy asks me that question, I might give a stupid answer as well. So, yeah, 50 times easily.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 50 times. Oh, yeah. And out in the bound. Oh, I don't give a fuck. If I'm in the Starbucks. Oh, yeah. Hand right down the pants. That is hilarious. All right. Let's go to Denmark. Zoo asks people to donate their small pets as food for live predators. This is Copenhagen. A zoo in Denmark is asking for donations of a small pet of small pets for food for their predators. Aalborg Zoo says it's trying to mimic the natural food chain of animals housed here for the sake of both animal welfare and the professional integrity, and offers assurances that the pets will be gently euthanized by trained staff. Yeah, don't worry, guys. They'll be gently euthanized. No, I've never heard of being gently euthanized. I hope that's a normal thing. The zoo in Northern Denmark explains in a Facebook post that if you have a healthy animal that needs to be given away for various reasons, feel free to donate it to us. The zoo points to guinea pigs, rabbits, chickens as possible donations. After being euthanized, the animal will be used as fodder, said the zoo. That way, nothing goes to waste. We'll ensure natural behavior, nutrition, and well-being of our predators, the zoo said. The online call for pet donations is accompanied by a picture of a wild cat baring its teeth with its mouth wide open and a link to the zoo's website, noting the facility is also interested in receiving horses. The zoo, which could not be immediately reached for additional details, did not list other pets or animals as possible donations.
I mean, if they have animal shelter problems and that hamster or whatever rodent would have been fucked up by a cat in the wild anyways, I can see how you could logically come to that conclusion. Still, the picture
it's,
is very
It sounds
bad.
Terrible. I mean, it sounds terrible, but yeah. I have to read one of the comments. One of the commenters said, I suggest that in-laws be used instead. I think that's funny. Yeah, nice. It's like one guy writes, I don't know how they would be able to gently euthanize a small animal and feed it to a large animal without a chemical being used for the predator to consume it. Knock it over the head. Unfortunately, drowning is considered euthanasia for wildlife. I don't know. Here's the hard part. The hard part is how you tell your kids. Because, I mean, the majority of people who have guinea pigs or rabbits are not childless adults, right? So at some point,
that's true.
You say to yourself, "I'm in Denmark, and goddamn, this gerbil's getting me. I've had it with this guinea pig. It's driving me crazy, And then we get rid of this. What are we gonna do? How are we gonna get rid of him? Like, well, we can't. You know, there's a big problem with the kill shelters in this country. You know, in our country.
Look, you have to sell it to the kids. You have to advertise to them that you're going to watch it as well. It's big entertainment, and it's like going to the UFC.
This guinea pig will die a noble death. So this caged predator.
Maybe
can,
it puts up a fair fight.
But there's no. But
the
here's the problem.
Right?
It's like it's not as if they're fighting for their lives. I mean, they knock it over the head and they serve it on a plate to these fucking animals.
I thought about killing. I thought about that being the actual act of eating and being hunted, because you know maybe they didn't stay.
They shouldn't
otherwise.
Have these goddamn animals.
So maybe they
just
threw
goddamn
it in
animals
there.
In zoos for one. But then asking the fucking the public, hey, guess what? Unless this is a joke, hey, you know what? You got a horse around that you don't want anymore. You know it's got to be healthy though. So that's the other thing. So it's like let's say you got an animal that's like really not in good shape, cancer maybe, or some sort of kidney disease, and you're like, yeah, you know, we got to put him down anyway. Maybe we'll bring him to the zoo. Oh no. This is a too unhealthy an animal for our fucking predators. It's just like we need the fucking healthy ones. So all of a sudden now it's not like a question of health of the animal. It's a question of like. We need, as they said, fodder.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally
terrible.
I mean, what pops into my mind? I don't know how it is in the U.S. I've never heard of it, but do you guys know that in Austria we eat horses?
Yeah, I heard about it. We don't eat them in the United States. I know they eat them in Canada.
Yeah. No, we do too. I thought that might be a curious fact. Maybe some Americans don't know because, I mean, my wife and most of the women I know hate it because
horses,
of course. But at the same time, I mean, it looks pretty similar to a cow in my eyes.
You know what? I have my family. We went to Montreal not too long, a number of years ago. Montreal, believe it or not, for me, it's a 5-hour drive to Montreal. And Montreal is a super duper French styled city. 5 hours away from where I live. So I could go for lunch and I could be in, like, we used to call it jokingly France Junior because, you know, everything goes into kilometers and like everything's in French and stuff like that. And I guess, I don't remember, but I guess I had horse somewhere. And then my wife and daughter would say, oh yeah, you had horse. It was so unremarkable that I don't even remember having horse. But like, I mean,
I would say it tastes pretty much like
beef. Is that true?
I would think so. I mean, there was a scandal a few years back in Austria where apparently there wasn't enough beef, or for whatever reason, horse was cheaper, and then they just sold horse meat labeled as beef. So the difference can't be huge. I mean, you couldn't sell chicken or pork as beef. It just wouldn't work. People wouldn't buy it. But apparently you can sell horse meat as beef.
That's crazy.
I mean, it was pretty crazy. Nobody got hurt, but the principle of it being mislabeled and then you eating something else, I mean, you know, that's pretty crazy.
I had one of the first restaurants I worked at called Alva. It was actually the Alva sign from the restaurants in my shop. When we got there, the chef said, I have the best turkey burger on the menu. And everyone loves it. And he says, the secret is I don't use turkey, I use chicken. I use chicken. And he says, and he claims, and this is sounds like some bullshit too. He's like, I talked to some doctors and they said that you couldn't be allergic to one without being allergic to the other. And there's no like scientific difference between a turkey and a chicken, but the chickens are juicier or whatever. And in my mind, I was just like, yeah, but that's pretty lame if you're telling people you're serving turkey burgers and it's really chicken.
Yeah, that's definitely a bad thing to
do. I think
it's disingenuous and you're undermining your own reputation if you do that. It's like us selling a certain steel and then it is another steel in the knife. That's just almost the most unprofessional thing you could do. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Is misleading your consumer. I am concerned with the way
even though, he did upgrade the meat. I mean, we have to be honest. It's so in that sense, if I think about it, if I lie and I say I use a worse steel and in reality I use actually a better steel, that puts it in a different category. Now that I think about it.
It is interesting.
Because I would say chicken is an upgrade to turkey. Chicken is more expensive and usually it's more juicy and has a little more bite, I would say.
It's definitely for a burger. A turkey burger is fine, but chicken burger blows the doors off a turkey burger. Like, it is juicier.
Yeah.
It's definitely juicier.
Yeah.
But I am concerned with with how tariffs are going and with how the world is in terms of, you know, the population growth. I am worried about food sources. And at some point, I think there are going to be a lot more people eating things that they wouldn't normally have eaten before. And horse is probably going to be on the menu a lot quicker than, I don't know if it's going to be on the menu in the United States. I think that people have, this idea of what, America is built on, and it's cowboys and riding horses. And the thought of eating a horse is like, I don't know. I don't know if Americans could handle it.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar with us. We don't have that much of a horse culture in the sense of cowboys and the Wild West and all that you guys have. But I mean, still riding here is very popular and anchored in history as well. So to most people, especially women, because I think they're more sensitive with animals, right. Or I don't know how to put it, but most women I know have an issue with that. Most men don't really either. They don't like it for other reasons, but the horse itself isn't the problem. And then on the other, we also eat rabbits.
Yeah,
I think you guys do too. Usually women have an issue with that as well, because rabbits are cute. I mean, if you eat an animal, I think a pig could be as cute as a rabbit, and I wouldn't enjoy killing an animal. And pigs are fucking smart, which kind of hurts the soul.
It's all at some point there has to be some sort of like, oh God. I give a lot of credit to guys like hunters who, you know, they go out and they ethically get all their meat and they're very specific. I talk to Riley Kirkpatrick all the time, and he's very, like, you know, mindful in regards to where his meat comes from, and he's not always just like gun happy and like pulling triggers anytime he sees something move, and he's very thoughtful. And some days, you know, I envy that. For me, it's amount of time. If I gotta eat a salad, it's fine. I'm so over it all.
Yeah. I mean, we don't eat crazy amounts of meat either, but at the same time, I don't know if I could completely live without meat. It just tastes too good. I'm being fucking
honest.
No,
it's true. It's true. My daughter, before she left, she wanted a steak, so we cooked a steak and it was fucking good. You know, we don't eat a lot of beef. We don't eat a lot of beef. We're now, because I'm running the marathon, I'm trying to get my protein up, so I'm eating a lot more chicken than I used to, a lot more fish. Yeah. But it's like all of it, I could, you know, if I had to give it up, I'd just get, I can, I used to be such a food person, and it was so exhausting. It was so exhausting to me to listen. Oh, you gotta have this. And when you have the chomp, you're gonna have the seventh rib from the this and the, oh, it's gotta be like this. And to keep up with all these trends, it's just too exhausting. And I got to the point where I was so exhausted by it all that I just don't even care. Care. I'm getting old, Ben.
I would just do what makes myself happy. And
there you go. So what's coming up in life? Anything new? What do you got going on?
Today was my first day at work, so I'm kind of catching up. And two exciting collabs, though. I'll announce it here. I have a big collaboration with Toma from Florence.
Outstanding.
And Kitchen. Yeah, it will be very exciting. It's something I've never done, and he has never done, I think. So very exciting. He's out of his comfort zone. I am as well. So in that sense, very exciting. And I think exciting for potential customers as well. And then I'm having another collaboration with Oliver Mertens as well, OAL Knives.
Awesome.
And another collaboration with Thomas Finesse from, I don't know if you've seen his work. I mean, I could see you really appreciate that. Maybe I'll send you a link afterwards.
Okay, cool.
He's great. Thomas Finesse. He does some, I think engraving is the wrong word, because he inlays would be the correct work. Word. It's similar to the Krav Maga that John LaMothe does, but, you know, similar in the sense that it's an inlay, but it stands out. It's relief and crazy shit, flowers and Japanese symbols, and he does his artwork on, I don't know, should I spill the beans? On a knife of mine. Let's say on a knife of mine.
Oh, awesome. Well, that's exciting. Listen, anybody who does a collaboration with you, they gotta be on the money, because I it'd get much better than you. You're the Bob Kramer of Europe, you know that?
Yeah. Thanks, but no, don't.
All right, listen.
You're the Bob Kramer of podcasts.
That I will take. Here's the funny thing about that, and I'll leave it alone. You know, podcasting, you know, I back up by Howard Stern, you have to have a little bit of extra confidence that you normally wouldn't in life. So when it comes to podcasting, I am the Bob Kramer of podcasts. I will take that. If you're the Bob Kramer of Europe, I'm the Bob Kramer podcast. Okay?
Nice.
We're doing this together. All right, guys. Listen, you know Ben Camone. You know him. You know him. He's the best. He's the best. He's my guy. It's always great to speak with him. I'm going to have all the links to the charity event that we're both involved in that that Ben got it all squared away. Shout out to my guys over at High Carbon. Listen to my guys at High Carbon. Don't give them a hard time. I'm with them. They're the guys, and I'm 100% with them. And you got to follow Ben. All of Ben's links will be on where you're listening to this. And Ben, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Fun talking to you, as always.
It's always good. All right, guys, we will see you next week. Thanks again, Ben.
Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.